This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a Joy 94.9 podcast presented by Paul Anthony with the assistance of the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Officers, Victoria Police, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9 working together to make our community safe.
Keeping our community informed. Joy 94.9.
Paul Anthony with you and the good police, Gabby and Scott from the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Office. We'll start off by saying, Scott, some information has come to the attention of the police about a way to get a quick response.
What's come to our attention is that there are some people, you know, it's not everyone, but there are some people that are calling the police and exaggerating the need for the police to attend their house so that they'll get a quicker response.
Can you give me a bit of an example of what went on?
The one that's come to our attention, and the reason that I was contacted, is because there was two incidents while police were on night shift, and they both involved gay men. And the one example is that a particular man rang up the police saying that a man was breaking into his house with a knife. And when the police turned up, it was just a simple case of the ex-boyfriend had turned up and had knocked on the front door in the early hours of the morning, and when he was asked to go away, he left. And for whatever reason, the person at the house decided that he needed the police to get there quickly, and to ensure that they got there quickly, he threw in the story about the knife. So you can imagine, for the police in that particular circumstance, it required us to respond in a way that we thought was serious.
People have been told to say this?
Yeah, there's a rumour going around, and it seems to be in the gay community at the moment, but I've certainly heard of it in other parts of the community as well, that a good way to get the police there is to exaggerate the response. So certainly, what the information that's come to us is there were two last week, all from one police station. Both times it was the same sergeant that responded to what were reported as serious incidents, one with a knife, one with a firearm, but in both instances there was no serious threat, there was no knives, there was no firearms involved.
Okay. Where did the gay and lesbian liaison officers get this type of information?
As I said, there was a sergeant on night shift. It was an inner suburban police station, and the sergeant there attended both of those incidents, and he had concerns, so he was thinking about a way that he could get some information out to the gay community to say there are serious ramifications that go with these sorts of exaggerations, and so he contacted me to see if there was a way we could get some information out, and your lovely station provides us that avenue.
What sort of problems would this cause for the police?
Well, it causes problems for police simply because we generally look at each job separately and rate what kind of response is required. So generally jobs, you would just drive to these jobs at a normal speed, at the speed limit. But if it's a serious job that we rate as life-threatening or anything similar to that, then we would go at a much greater speed, lights and bells.
Fantastic, you get to use the lights and bells.
Actually, it's not.
Oh, isn't it?
No, because
it puts us, our lives, at risk. It can put the general public at risk.
We pay all due care and attention when we're required to do that, but it's something abnormal. So other users of the road are not expecting a police car to come flying past them, or we might have to go through a red light. Now, we don't speed through red lights, but there's not the expectation that the police would be coming through red lights or that they wouldn't be stopping at stop signs. So it does place us at risk, and it places other people at risk.
In what way do you think it affects other members of the public?
If we determine that we need to have greater resources to a particular job, which would include one police car and other police cars from the same area or different area, you may have specialist units attend, like the force response unit or special operations group. They're all sent to a job that may not actually need them, and if there is another job that needs those types of resources, then they may miss out.
And of course, there's the other thing that we need to throw in, because we're going to cordon off an area to try and contain a suspect. So it means that it impacts on people's ability to get in and out of their houses or to get to other places that they might need to be going to. So we put a lot of resources into an incident like this, and it really can impact greatly on other people, not just the police.
Well, it's pretty much a case of the boy who cried wolf, in a sense. Can you explain the boy who cried wolf syndrome?
Well, if we become aware of a certain person who's regularly calling with the same sorts of jobs, we actually do recognise who they are. We're aware of what's going on in the areas that we work. So if one particular person is doing that, then it might make us reconsider what types of resources we send to a particular job. And he or she may ring on this occasion with a real serious job, and we would look at it and remember the other jobs that they've called through that were false, and maybe consider not sending the appropriate resources to it.
We'd prioritise it differently, probably. So we'd still get to the job because we need to make sure, but we may put others ahead of it because of the other instances. So as you say, the boy who cried wolf type situation, it's almost heading down the path of a vexatious complainant where somebody is complaining constantly about something and the police get to the point where they almost say, well, you know, we're not going to attend because, you know, this is occurring. It is quite serious.
Is it a criminal offence to give a false report in that sense?
We were talking about this earlier, and it's borderline for what's called a false report to police. So it's causing an investigation to occur where there is actually no offence. Now, the difficulty with the two instances that we were talking about last week that occurred is that there were offences that had occurred, crimes that had occurred, but they were exaggerated to get a police response. So it's borderline. We might consider charging, but, you know, there's not a great deal of benefit in us charging in these circumstances. But if it was ongoing, we may well consider it.
What if the person's opinion, though, was that it was important and the police don't think it is?
What we're after is accurate information so that we can prioritise appropriately against all of the jobs that we're given in any particular moment. So the person can, if they give us accurate information, we can weigh it up against a whole range of jobs. And it's not unusual for, especially in the inner suburbs, for police to have 9-10 jobs on what we call on the plate, on the go at any one particular time. And we have to prioritise those by importance. And it does mean sometimes that it's 2, 3, 4 hours before we do get to some of those lower priority jobs.
Give us a bit of an example of what sort of information the police need when we're calling 000.
Well, definitely the first thing I would advise is to give the location, because once the location's given, we can send resources out directly to that spot immediately, or at least get the information over the air so we know where to go. Also, what is occurring? What's going on? What do we need to know is happening? As much information in relation to that as possible. So they're the first two things, definitely. And then description of offenders, if you can give those, what they're wearing, what they look like. So if the offenders have left when we get there, we can actually look for them on the way or have other cars patrolling looking for these people. And also directions of travel, if people have left the scene or a car has left the scene, it gives us an idea of, once we're attending a job or patrolling, the direction to have a look in.
In regards to car accidents or an accident involving two vehicles of any type, are you allowed to leave the scene before the police get there?
You can leave the scene. There's some requirements that you need to do. If there's nobody injured, then it's okay, but you need to exchange names and addresses with the other party. So there's no need to report to police where there's no injuries. Where there's injuries and you're likely to access services from the Transport Accident Commission, then you will need a police report. But that doesn't have to be done at the scene. It can be done at a police station. But if there are injuries, the ambulance will always call the police to attend as well.
So what happens if there's an accident and then by the time the police get there, everyone's gone?
That's not unusual. We're unlikely to follow it up unless we're aware that there's injuries. So if the ambulance has called us, then we'll follow up with the ambulance dispatch people and see if that someone was taken to hospital for medical treatment, and then we'll follow it up from there.
The other day I was on a tram on my way home, and the tram had stopped at a stop, and all of a sudden, bang, crash, boom, some lady had run up the back of the tram. Don't ask me how she did it, but half a car basically, and I'm surprised she never went through the windscreen. Everyone got out of the tram, then they're trying to separate the car from the tram. Mm. The tram driver takes off in order to separate the car from the tram. The car goes with it. So then they end up putting it in park, putting the handbrake on. The lady's out of the car. I call 000. They ask all these questions. They then back her car into a side street, and we all hop on the tram and go. And I'm thinking, okay, well, now when the police turn up, they're not going to find out where she is.
Worst case scenario for the police as well, because the accident reports that would have to be compiled there, because everybody who's on the tram, names need to go onto our report.
There you go.
So it takes forever. But yeah, we do have the ability to follow up from there. We've got your details if we need to, because you've rung 000. We would be able to go through the tram depot as well.
They did ask if I wanted to leave my details, and I said, don't you know who I am?
Obviously not. I'm on the police website.
Well, I am now. Speaking of which, if you get across to police.vic.gov.au, you'll be able to see a whole heap of stuff about the Pride March. Pride March is on for Victoria Police. There's a big photo of the police group. Then lower down, you've got Christine Nixon marching.
With Jill Wood, and Shell Henderson's there, and Ken Tucknot, and Mark Keane, yes. Some of our police involved.
Further on down underneath that, you've got Scott, just before he lost his voice, with Michelle as well, and the back of me.
At the outside broadcast, that's right.
I'm not sure what's going on there. It looks like I've got a horsetail tucked underneath my thing. Underneath there, you've got the police pipe band.
Yep, the Victoria Police pipe band.
As well. So, police.vic.gov.au.
And no one tried to look under their kilts, which is a good thing.
Is it?
Well, we did have that problem last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And look, we...
Sorry about that.
We had to do a bit of work with the pipe band to encourage them to come back this year because there were a number of males and females on the side of the crowd who thought that they would like to see what's underneath the pipe band's kilt.
A little too curious.
And I can tell you that a few of them walked away with sore hands after the drummer lashed out with his drumstick to discourage that action.
You sure it was his drumstick?
Can I just finish off by saying, when we were talking about the boy who cried wolf, that certain scenarios that are given to the police require set responses. And this is really important for people to understand. So if you do ring through and you're not providing accurate information, then we will set in train responses based on the information that you've given us because they are set responses. So if you escalate it or exaggerate it, then it will require a serious response with large numbers of resources from police. But the converse is true as well. If you talk about it in such a way that you lessen the extent of the information, then we might only respond with a single unit when we required the whole 10,000 police to march down onto the scene. So it's important to provide accurate information.
Get across to crimestoppers.com.au or you can also ring 1-800-333-000. Just a reminder that the website is encrypted and the telephone calls are not recorded and you can't tell where they're coming from. Gabby and Scott from the Gay and Lesbian Liaison Office. Paul Anthony with you Thursday afternoon.
Thank you.
If you have any knowledge concerning any crime, call Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000 or visit crimestoppers.com.au. If it's an emergency, always call 000.
The Victoria Police GLOWS, Crime Stoppers and Joy 94.9, working together to help make our community safe.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.